They should be flayed alive.
Look closer, Doc. The driver and those sex workers are slaves, too. They're wearing the silver bracelets just like us. They're just trying to survive.
Helplessness is a state of mind, Madam Doctor. That is a lesson I learned a long, long time ago, under conditions too painful to relate.
Sure, but...
Mildred, even in the direst of circumstances, we human beings have the power to make our own choices, to either live by our own rules or to embrace the rules of others. Look again at the slave catchers and tell me they are not enjoying themselves immensely.
He's got you there, Millie.
Yeah, maybe they do need chilling.
They watched the bus driver use a hand-powered pump to refill his fuel tanks from the tier of steel drums marked Baron Jolt. Once this was done, the big man climbed back in the wag, and he and his sluts drove back the way they'd come, disappearing in a spiral of dust.
Off to collect another busload of fools.
Before they do, may God strike them dead. Or better still, afford me the opportunity.
Look at there.
The companions all looked. A pair of ore trucks appeared over the rise, rolled down the road, and pulled off onto the plain near the domes. They watched the wags dump their cargoes into the semi-trailer's hopper. They had a much closer view of the operation this time, and could see that the loads consisted of chunks of nuke glass and various other seemingly unsorted debris. When both wags had been emptied, the soldiers ordered the whole group of slaves to their feet.
Walk ahead of the trucks. The road's clearly marked. If you step off the road, you'll lose your hands and feet. If you fall behind, the trucks will crush you. It's 8 miles to where you're going.
In response to the slowly advancing ore wags, the assembled slaves, companions included, began to move forward. And as they did so, they were funneled onto the road by bracketing phalanxes of troopers.
Stay together, people.
The mob was mostly made up of men, aged from their late teens to early 60s. There were a few women, and some of them carried small children. They all walked with stooped shoulders and lowered heads. Some cried brokenly into their hands. Others stared blankly at their feet. Clearly, they knew enough about Slake City's singular unnatural wonder to realize they were on a one-way trip.
What's it like where they're taking us, Dad?
Don't know, Dean. Never heard of anybody going out that far on the nuke glass and returning to tell about it.
Oh, we're coming back.
That's right. We're coming back. Keep that thought front and center.
After the first gradual rise, the road began a slow descent as it wound towards the sunken epicenter of the 20-mile-wide blast crater. The trailing ore trucks kept the slaves moving at a steady 5-mile-an-hour pace. Even this late in the day, the heat and glare off the glass was tremendous. The landscape before them was completely devoid of life. There was no soil for plants to grow in, no standing water. There were no birds flying overhead. There was just glass. Glass, glass, and more glass. The roadbed underfoot was a uniformly light shade of gray-green because it had been etched for better traction. On either side of the roadway, the glass's coloration was irregular, and in some places it edged almost to black. In those spots, large, shadowy objects lay entombed many feet down. Buried things, in some cases huge, caused erratic humps and dips to appear in the surface. There were also great yawning holes filled with fractured, room-sized sheets of glass. The road had to be diverted around these massive cave-ins. There were truly made shapes on the surface, like breaking waves frozen in time, or flows of dirty iceberg separated by banks of ground glass, blown by the wind into glittering heaps.
We'd better cover our noses and mouths. We don't want to inhale or swallow any of that glass dust. Try to keep it out of your eyes, too.
They did as Mildred suggested. When the slaves moving alongside them saw what they were doing, they followed suit, tearing off strips of their clothing to protect themselves. Even over the engine and wheel noise of the ore wags, Ryan could hear the sounds of splitting glass. Beneath his boots, the road surface was crazed with an interlacing of fine cracks caused by earth tremors and the weight of passing loaded trucks. They trudged around a series of high spires set along the perimeter of a wide rectangle. As the sun angle changed, Ryan could see dull orange monoliths inside the spires, encased by nuke glass were the rusting steel girders of a ruined skyscraper. Farther on, they came across a field of smaller spikes, perhaps one-tenth as high, created by the crystalline growth of some melted components. The elevated areas were few in comparison to the low spots, which ranged from small, star-shattered cave-ins a few feet wide to great sprawling bowls of glass blocks hundreds of yards across. Evidence of recent human activity, the narrow holes hacked into the thermoglass by Slake City scroungers, disappeared after they'd walked less than a mile. The farther they went, the hotter it got. The crater's concavity seemed to focus and intensify the sun's rays. As they walked, the horizon on all sides shrank away. Snow-capped mountain peaks were gradually blocked from view by the crater's rim until there was only sky and glass. 3 miles in, by Ryan's reckoning, the first of the slaves collapsed. A man in his 50s with a big pot belly and a wild shock of white hair suddenly clutched at his chest and dropped onto the roadway. He fell into a fit, his body twitching, his eyes rolled up in his head. Everybody but Mildred stepped over or around him and kept on moving. She knelt to help the man.
Are you okay?
Come on, Mildred.
But John...
Millie, you know there's nothing you can do for her.
All right. Damn it.
They'd only gone a dozen yards when from behind they heard the wheels of the first wag crunch over the body.
Fuckers.
Inside another mile, two more people fell beneath the huge wheels. After the third fatality, the truck stopped, and the slaves were allowed to rest and were given a cup of warm water each. There was pushing and shoving in the water line. The companions stayed together and made sure they all got their rations.
What's that? Looks like gold.
The afternoon sun flashed off something buried under humped-up layers of glass. It was, in fact, gold. It was the gilded head and shoulders of an enormous statue with arms extended. Its hairline melted down into its chin.
That is all that is left of the angel Moroni.
Macaroni?
No, the angel Moroni. It was a great statue that used to adorn the east tower of the Mormon Tabernacle. The place of worship was completed in 1893. 3 years before I was time-trawled by the Whitecoats. Before the life I should have lived, the death I should have died, was stolen from me. I remember showing newspaper pictures of it to my beloved wife and my cherished children. What consummate wickedness conceived this nightmare? What spavined pelvis birthed this abomination of God's beauty?
Ryan looked from face to face. Doc wasn't the only one showing the effects of the forced march under skyrocketing temperatures. All of them were breathing hard under their bandanas, their foreheads flushed and slick. But there was something else. It was there in their eyes like a passing shadow. Not just simple exhaustion, but a growing sense of doom.
I put it to you, my dear esteemed colleagues, that here, at last, we have come face to face with the hard and bitter fruit of our civilization's ignorance and arrogance.
When the downhill trek resumed, as they approached Ground Zero, the focal point of the nuke's blast, they were confronted with even wilder and more fanciful hellscapes. They circled immense frozen whirlpools of dirty glass. They looked down into the seemingly bottomless pit of crevasses, voids the nukes had drilled thousands of feet deep into the bedrock, which were then glazed over or backfilled with cascades of molten thermoglass. As Ryan walked, he tried to keep his mind focused and alert by paying attention to these bizarre details. It was difficult because he was lightheaded, having sweated out a lot more water than he'd taken in.
What the hell is that?
There.
Jack raised his pale arm to point ahead on the right, just off the road. Ryan was treated to a strange sight.
Damn.
5 stickies lay marooned on a flat-topped spire of glass. Even from a distance, they didn't look human. A combination of their hairless skulls, their flat black doll's eyes, their tiny nostrils centered in moist flab, and their rows of yellow nail-point teeth. Ryan assumed the killer muties had panicked and tried to run, probably because the earthquake had frightened them. The attempt had cost them their sucker hands and feet. Then the plane of glass around them had collapsed, again probably due to the earthquake, leaving them stranded on the raised hourglass pinnacle. Because they had no hands or feet, they couldn't stand, let alone jump the required 40 feet to safety. 40 feet over a deep chasm lined with huge chunks of broken glass. Ryan had never heard Stickies make noises like that. So desperate, so fearful. They certainly were not the familiar